For the past 25 years, Bordeaux Index has been relentless in our focus on changing the fine wine market for collectors and investors. Today, we are the largest seller of fine wine and spirits globally. Bordeaux Index. Join us and visit bordeauxindex.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast.
And I'm Olivia Potts.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Andy Burnham. Andy is a British politician who has served as Mayor of Greater Manchester since 2017. He also served in Gordon Brown's cabinet as Chief Secretary to the Treasury from 2007 to 2008, Culture Secretary from 2008 to 2009, and Health Secretary from 2009 to 2010. Andy, welcome to Table Talk.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to join you.
Andy, we're going to start where we always do, at the beginning, and ask you, what are your earliest memories of food?
Oof, goodness. I'm trying to think. The things that are kind of vivid in my mind, and it's my typical northerner shtick coming up straight away. I remember sort of a Friday night and the chips coming in from the chippy. You know, it was a bit of a chippy tea thing, as people know. And, you know, I always get kind of laughed at for kind of doing my, you know, my professional northerner routine. But I do remember that really vividly, the smell of the vinegar, the sort of white paper, you know, that all of that is really, really vivid in my mind. So I probably would say that.
And can you give us a sense of what mealtimes were like in your family when you were growing up?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm one of kind of three brothers, the middle of three. And I guess the first thing I would say would be competitive, really, is what they would have been, in that we all loved our food. And my mum was always, you know, really good cook. She put a lot of effort into it. He had to be pretty quick off the mark in our house. And otherwise, you know, you would find your brothers had stolen a march on you and, you know, had got the best roast potatoes or something like that. They were always kind of competitive, but brilliant though. You know, we're a close family, still are, all five of us. You know, we have always been a very close-knit family. And, you know, I can remember very much those sort of family meal times. And I think it's why I've tried to get my kids around the table at least once a week. Well, they're old now and a couple of them have left home, but it is so important, isn't it, just to get everyone around the table at least one time a week.
And what kind of things would you be eating together as a family during your childhood?
So it wasn't all chips and gravy. There were definitely nicer things that my mum made. So she was, as I say, she was quite a good cook. So spaghetti bolognese would stick in my mind, and quite a brilliant lasagna she used to make. It was quite sort of solid fare, but brilliant. And you know, she taught me actually a lot. I'm probably the best cook of my brothers, I would say. And I do cook quite a lot. I do most of the cooking at home. And a lot of that, the basics of what I know, came from my mum. You know, before I went to university myself, I kind of went through a lot of it with her and kind of, you know, got a grip on cooking basics. So I really remember that. I mean, one thing we would have, which was probably unique, unique to people from my part of the world, but my mum and dad both being from Liverpool. I was born in Liverpool, even though I'm the mayor of Greater Manchester, which is, you know, a tricky thing to negotiate every now and again. But we would have scouse on a Monday night. Now, that was a pretty much regular thing in our house. And for those who don't know, scouse was the sort of leftovers from the roast dinner. And, you know, generations of scouse mothers like mine had been taught how to do this, but do it to make it almost better than the roast dinner, which, you know, I was a big fan of scouse on a Monday. It was, as you can picture it, big solid potatoes, often with lamb rather than beef, carrots. I kind of loved Monday night scouse night.
And what about school food? Do you have happy memories of school food?
Ooh, a bit more of a mixed kind of memory, really. So another thing sort of unique to these parts is Manchester tart. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but from a primary school in the 1970s, which is, it got served up a lot from my memory. Basically, how can I describe it? Kind of pastry, fairly thick, with what you can only describe as a slab of custard on top of it. And I think some sprinklings of some kind.
Coconut.
Anyway, that's how I remember
desiccated
it.
Coconut on top, I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking I have a memory of that.
Yeah.
I think there are variations of Manchester tart, But it, yeah, I think it did have. And I say, when a 1970s primary school dinner lady made it, it was particularly substantial, if I remember rightly. Being somebody with a hearty appetite, I always quite liked it. So secondary school, we were allowed out at dinner times. I'm not sure schools do that these days, but you know, we used to wander off onto the high street in Newtonley Willows. And now this, again, I'm playing up to this northern thing, but I'm just going to have to, because this happens to be true. We used to have something called a chip bucket. A chip bucket. I don't know if you've ever had that on Table Talk podcast before.
No. Maybe I'm introducing something new here. Tell us what a chip bucket is.
Culinary delight from the northwest of England. Basically, we went to the baker's first, and you ordered a half a bloomer. So what they did was they gave you half a loaf, and you got half a bloomer. And what you did is you got the dough, and you tore all the dough out of it. So you kind of left a sort of a bucket, in effect, like a, you know, a shape. That then you went next door to the chippy and you got chips and gravy, and lots of vinegar in the gravy was pretty essential. And then that went in the loaf, and there you were. That was your chip bucket. That was my school dinner for quite a long time. Or there was a bit of a trend in my school for what people called an icy dinner. Anyone used to say that. Anyone getting an icy dinner today? And what that meant was sort of three or four, you know, like one would be a 99, then an oyster, then a wafer, you know, like one with two wafers in the middle. There was an ice cream van was allowed onto, I can't even believe it, this actually happened, but it was allowed onto the school premises at dinner time, which is a mad thing, isn't it? But it was. And we used to have an icy dinner some days. Never, ever admitted to it, ever, when I got home.
And when you left school, you went to read English at Fitzwilliam College, Cambridge.
I did.
Were you a proficient chef by that point? Had you learnt scouse at your mother's knee? What kind of cook were you at that point in your life?
Now, my mum's advice when I went to university, and this is kind of her big thing, really. My dad's advice when I went to university was stick to beer, which, as it turns out in life, is pretty good advice. I would recommend it to all of the youth listening to the Table Talk podcast. Stick to beer. Good life sort of lesson. My mum's was kind of never skimp on food. Even if you're struggling to pay for other things, always go and get good meat and good vegetables, and always make yourself something good, you know, at least once every couple of days. That was her big thing. And I remember being in Fitzwilliam College, where I was making, kind of very much taking my mum's words to heart, you know, a proper fillet steak or something, and you know, doing all the trimmings and everything. And a friend of mine who was at university with me, John Story, I remember him walking past one day saying, "You'd never starve, Andy, would you?" And I said, "Well, no, you need to invest in your food, you know, it's important." So, yeah, my mum really drilled that in, and actually I did follow her advice and did implement all of her culinary skills when I was fending for myself at university.
And Andy, I think I'm right in saying your wife, who you met at university, is Dutch. Is there a Dutch influence in your cooking or how you eat now?
Is there a Dutch influence? A little, I think. She introduced me at that age to sort of food I'd never even begun to kind of imagine. I always liked curries, but she introduced me to something called rice taffel. Is that something that you've heard about before? Yeah. Rice taffel is a Dutch Indonesian kind of speciality, and it's an amazing meal, actually. It's obviously, it's back to the, you know, the Dutch colonial days, but that's where it came from. And I think it's still quite a very big thing in Holland, you know, little pots of curry, but also, you know, certain type of rice. I'm trying to remember the name of the peanuts that you get, you know, when they're kind of quite broken down. It was always on the top of the food, caramelized onions, that kind of stuff. So right, if you go to Holland, actually, you know, you can, rice taffel is quite common in some of the Indonesian restaurants there. And her mum, who's sadly not with us anymore, but did try and teach me how to make it one time. So there is still a bit of knowledge of that in my cooking. I mean, largely Dutch food is as, if you like, stodgy as English, really, on the whole. You know, a lot of, there's a thing they have at New Year called oliebollen. I don't know if you've ever heard of those. They're like deep fried dough, isn't it? Basically, you know, with raisins in it and icing sugar on. Or poffertjes, They're like little pancakes, you know, tiny little...
You get the special pan for them with all the little divots.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
I've never used it.
Yeah, I was an expert at it. I tried. But poffertjes are quite a big thing when the kids were young because they're just like, yeah, I say little pancakes. So they used to love those. So a little bit of Dutch influence has crept in.
And you've obviously had a long political career. You're no stranger to elections or campaigns. Does your eating change when you're on the campaign trail?
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, it's kind of something that is hard to do when you're in the full, bearing the full brunt of any political campaign. You always actually, I reckon, best part of a stone you lose in most election campaigns. So I bet Liz and Rishi are pretty trim at the moment because they'll have been absolutely putting the steps in and the, you know, the work and not necessarily eating with it. So yeah, it's always April going into May is always like the time of the year where I probably look my sharpest, but then it quickly wears off again. But they're not conducive to good eating election campaigns. It's absolutely certain, and maybe explains some of the random things that we politicians come out with at the at the election period. You know, a bit too hungry and a bit sort of a bit delirious maybe, and maybe that's a political insight there that might explain why you get so frustrated with us.
And during sort of day-to-day life in Westminster, how does that compare? I mean, what were the kind of meals like when you were working in the cabinet?
Well, one of the things I do miss about Westminster is the members' tea room and some of the lovely people who work there. And there was, you know, just a great team. And for me, the tea room was not so much, you know, the exotic food that there is available in parts of the Westminster estate. It was more the real kind of basics when there's a late vote, you know, poached eggs on toast, that kind of thing. They used to do the basics brilliantly, really. And it's, yeah, something that I miss. I think the focus is always on all of this, isn't it, in terms of, you know, MPs looking after themselves and all the rest of it. But I think sometimes MPs do need a little bit of, I mean, I'm not going to defend the prices necessarily, but, you know, it can be quite hard, really, when you're there. From, you know, nearly every MP I knew started work around 9 or 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock latest. But often you're there until 10 o'clock or gone 10 o'clock. You know, it's important really that you can access good food in the parliamentary estate. So, yeah, I think people should recognise that MPs need to eat as well sometimes.
In Manchester, you've had beers and burgers named after you. Have you tried the Andy Burnham line across the city?
Yeah, unbelievable. If you'd have said that to me a few years ago, I don't think I ever would have quite believed that I'd have a craft lager named after me. But I'm particularly proud of that, actually. It's a great thing. There was a King of the North can that came out. I think it was Seven Brothers, the brewery. And I've got a few of those knocking around at home. So, yeah, it was a very powerful, punchy sort of brew.
So
I'm not sure I completely live up to the brew, actually. I think, you know, people like drink the beer and think, oh, this bloke might be, and then they get disappointed then when they look at me. But, you know, it looks good in the can and it tastes good.
And Andy, you've campaigned a lot on food insecurity in Greater Manchester. Can you tell us a bit about the problems of food poverty in Manchester, and I guess particularly now against the backdrop of cost of living, sort of how you see it and what you think the challenges are going to be over the next year?
I'm really worried about it, Laura, because I think already, before we've even hit the worst of the autumn and the winter, people have made fairly massive changes to their eating habits. So I was in a homeless shelter, just to give you an example, just over a week ago. And the talk there was that people have turned their freezers off. They're not using their cookers because of the energy. They're living from the microwave already. And that they had started to develop sort of little microwavable meals for people. And that I pick that story up quite a lot as I go around. So it's not just the cost of food. It's the cost of the energy needed to produce the food. And already people are sort of really working this out in detail, you know, obviously because of the challenging sort of reality we've got. They were saying that a roast dinner, if you were to cook a roast dinner, I mean, it's an interesting question. I'll ask you both. What do you think the cost of the energy is to cook a typical roast dinner?
For a family of four?
Yeah.
£5?
Yeah. You're spot on. I think they said 4 to 5 pounds is what they said. Obviously, depending on how you cook it and all the rest of it. And they were saying that that rules it out for a lot of people straight away. So, I mean, obviously there are cheaper ways of doing it, I guess, if you could find a different way. But that is a lot of money. And what they were saying was the microwave costs, you know, you're talking 10 or 20p to heat something up. But actually the least expensive item in the kitchen is what? It's like I'm turning the tables here. But Lara, what do you reckon?
I thought it was the microwave, but is there something cheaper?
This is Boris Johnson territory now, isn't it? Like kettles and all of
those. Slow cooker,
apparently.
Oh, the slow cooker, yeah.
Apparently, even though they're on a lot, you know, they're on for a long time, the energy they use is really, really minimal.
It's about the same as an energy-saving light bulb to have it on, to have a slow cooker on. Mm. It's remarkable how low it is, but it requires a certain level of cooking knowledge and raw ingredients. I mean, that's the problem with it, that we're sort of relying on people having knowledge that we've never instilled in them.
Yeah. And that, to answer the question, is part of what we're thinking about. You know, how do we help people with all of this stuff? So food security, we have a food security action network here based on our homelessness action network, which is a very big partnership, citywide partnership of, you know, all the sectors, public, private, faith, voluntary community. You know, we do this kind of stuff quite well. And we have Reverend Ian Rutherford, one of our Methodist ministers here in the city, who's leading that for us. And it's doing lots of great work. One thing being the No Child Goes Hungry campaign, which, building on the work of Marcus Rashford, the great Marcus Rashford, we're giving out food cards in partnership with the co-op that are preloaded with money to get to kids in the school holidays. They're doing a whole range of other things as well. But alongside that, it's in the news today, actually. Gordon Brown has done an initiative in Scotland where surplus white goods and other products are being distributed alongside some of the food banks. And we're looking at that as well to see if we can, you know, get those microwaves out to people who might not have one, or slow cookers. And it probably is true, Olivia, that we'll probably need to put in some education as well around, you know, some work with our food clubs around that as well.
I was now going to move on to something more frivolous, but there's a real moment of not really knowing what to do about that kind of thing when you're seeing people actually going hungry in 2022 and you as a mayor are having to look at finding slow cookers and secondhand microwaves for people. That's really quite frightening.
It is on a scale now that I don't think we've ever seen before. And obviously we've had a new prime minister just announced. To the extent that they reach out, Liz reaches out, or any of her team or any of her new cabinet, what I'll be saying is I do think we need to approach the autumn in the same way that we approached the early stages of the pandemic. I do think it's that serious, and I think we need to get ourselves into that mode. Because if you think about it this way, already people's mental health is at a low ebb because of the pandemic, and you know, that situation hasn't sort of recovered, if you like. And I think it's particularly the case where we are, where you and I are, Greater Manchester, where, you know, it did take a bigger toll here than elsewhere. But I noticed that very much with regard to young people. So now if you go from that and you think about people at home with everything switched off, with, you know, it being quite cold in the house and then not fully eating properly, what's that going to do to people's mental health through the winter? You know, it's a really serious situation, I think. And I do think we need to approach it like that in terms of, you know, more cross-party, perhaps thinking of interventions that ordinarily we wouldn't make. I do think it's very serious, actually. And I do think it's not an exaggeration to say that lives are definitely at risk as we go through this period. And, you know, just bringing people the basic cheer of good food and light and warmth is going to be really, really important.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? When you talk about good cheer, I mean, food is inherently more than sustenance or sort of nutritional value. Tell us about comfort food for you. Tell us how food is important in your home.
Oh, I am very, very much sort of a lover of the basics, really. Just basic things done well. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to sort of comfort food, it would be good beans on toast. You know, that is a bit of a go-to when I come home. Cheesy beans on toast, if I'm feeling extravagant, probably. But you know, that I just think just always hits the spot, always. Or poached eggs on toast. So, yeah, I mean, not so much comfort food, I guess. It's more, you know, just something that you'll know, you'll just have it and then you'll just feel it will, you know, it will go down well and it will completely hit the spot, as I say. So, yeah, I'm a very, very basic eater during the week. And at the weekends, I do try and do something a bit more. I made a chicken tikka masala last night, which was pretty good, I've got to say. It's dead cheap as well, you know, really simple, but really good. So that's a family favourite. But I mean, during the week I try to keep it simple. And after a hard day in politics, beans on toast, poached eggs, bacon and egg, those are the things that I kind of, and they're quick. And that's often what I need when I get home.
And Andy, in 2015, when you were running to be the leader of the Labour Party, you asked in a Mumsnet hustings whether you have a favourite biscuit, and you said you don't have a sweet tooth. Is that still the case, or have you come around to a biscuit?
That's what I was saying at the start about, you know, and I'm sure I'll get some of it after this podcast, you know, the sort of professional northerner thing. but it was like one of those moments in the leadership campaign where you walk in the office and people used to fire, oh, we got a survey from Mumsnet, can you quickly answer it? And, what's this? Biscuit, I don't really eat biscuits. Oh, what do you love then? No, chips and gravy. And, you know, then it appeared in their thing, favourite biscuit, chips and gravy. It was like, oh, God. It still comes up now, honestly. It will come up once a week on Twitter. Somebody will mention it. So it is a dangerous one. But I honestly could take or leave biscuits. No, I generally leave them. Don't really kind of crave them. And I don't have a sweet tooth. The only thing that really tests me would be Haribo or something like that. You know, I could go through a whole bag of those like in literally 10 minutes. You know, is that once I go on something like that, I can't really, you know, I have to keep those away. But no, I don't have much of a sweet tooth. I have a very strong savory tooth.
And just to finish, tell us what your desert island meal, your ultimate meal would be.
It would be the perfect roast dinner, I think, is what it would be. I mean, I actually love, you know, I love food pretty much every European country, you know, and as I say, love Asian food, but everywhere, really. I'm not a fussy eater. I'm, you know, quite kind of broad eater. That was my mum's influence. But it's that perfect roast dinner, isn't it, is the thing that I would just always come back to, you know, with sort of, I don't know, beef always, but properly done rare beef. But yeah, that would be the thing. And if I didn't, I would really crave that if I was denied that. I just don't think you can actually beat that. You can't beat roast potatoes done properly as well. You know, that stuff is massively important. Cauliflower cheese for me has always got to be in that mix as well. Parsnips, yeah, you've got to have the full thing. To be honest, I've got to finish on this note, haven't I? Or I would be letting down my stereotype. The gravy. It's all about the gravy. It's a good motto for the tabletop podcast,
a good
I think.
Motto.
I think we'll adopt that.
That's the Burnham advice.
Andy, thank you very much for joining Table Talk.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.